This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
You're listening to The Reading Group from BBC World Service. In this series, we bring together listeners, students of English, literature teachers, and other contributors from the world of books to share their enthusiasm for reading. We hope that following this series will encourage your own interest in reading books in English as a foreign language.
Hello. Today we open the covers of a book that's been written especially for learners of English.
The soldiers find two books on the floor. They have a few pages which aren't burnt. They give the books to me. The fire has eaten the village. There is nothing here now. Only me and dog. And Whitetail, and two books with black pages.
Jojo's story is an example of what's sometimes known as a simplified reader. We'll be meeting the woman who wrote it. And we visit the British Library to see a special manuscript of a poem by the American writer Sylvia Plath. But we begin with the first of a series of talks written for us by teacher and author Martin Parrott. Today, he celebrates the simplified reader.
How good is your English? Good or bad, if you like reading, then simplified readers are there to help you. If you're still in the early stages of learning, then simplified readers can be a wonderful alternative to a difficult book. And even if your English is really good, simplified readers can provide a crutch, a way to get over initial problems and to get started. So what are simplified readers? Simplified readers are books which use common words and straightforward sentences. They avoid making references to aspects of culture that might baffle foreign learners. Some simplified readers are original works, specially written for learners of English. For example, I was recently very moved reading a book called Jojo's Story by Antoinette Moses and published by Cambridge University Press. This is a novel in 40 pages, told almost entirely in the present tense. Other readers are adaptations of popular modern works, or even of the classics. All the major publishers produce simplified readers, and they're available at different, clearly indicated levels of difficulty, from elementary to advanced. Elementary simplified readers are normally written with a very restricted vocabulary of 400 head words. When you begin to find these readers too easy, you can go on to the higher levels, 800 head words, 1,400, or even 2,000 head words. As I've said, what kind of reader you choose and how you use it will depend on your own level of English. If you're still not too confident about reading in English, then why not forget original works until you have built up your knowledge of the language? With simplified readers, you can enjoy that buzz of success that comes with understanding most or everything you read. And of course, the very act of reading builds up your fluency and expands your vocabulary. And for really advanced learners, simplified readers can still have a use. Getting started is often the most difficult part of reading a book, even in our first language. Typically, the first page is so full of new information that we struggle to make sense of it. How many times do we have to read it before we feel confident enough to turn the page? Before we have an idea of where and when the story is taking place, who the characters are, and what is going on? So, if you want to get to grips with an original text, then why not start off with a simplified version just until you feel comfortable with who and when and where and what it's all about? You can then pick up the original and glide more easily through the difficult first pages, enjoying all the subtlety and sophistication of the language and of how the book is constructed.
Thank you. In his talk, Martin Parrott referred to a simplified reader that moved him recently, a book called Jojo's Story. Well, the author of that book has joined the reading group today.
Hello, I'm Antoinette Moses. I'm an author and a playwright, and I specialise in writing simplified readers.
Antoinette, welcome.
Thank you.
Jojo's a 10-year-old boy who tells his own story. We see the world through his eyes. And in many ways, I have to say, it's a terrible world. When the story begins, Jojo is alone in his village with only his favourite chicken, White Tail, a nearby dog and the ghosts of his family and friends as companions. Everyone else in his village has been killed by enemies from across the river.
It's dark again. So it's evening. And there's only me. Why? Why aren't I dead too? That's a stupid question, Jojo, I say to myself. You know why you aren't dead. You aren't dead because you weren't in the house. You were in the fields when the men came.
That's the beginning of a sad, sad story, Antoinette.
It is sad, but it's. I hope it, you people feel it's also real.
The story's told through Jojo's eyes. Tell us a little bit about the character of Jojo.
Well, he's a very lively 10-year-old boy who has had a happy life on his farm in his village before the story begins and has been caught up in something that is so big he doesn't understand it to start with. And so he goes on this journey of discovery. He meets Chris, a photographer and journalist, and then he goes to a children's house where he meets Dr. Nikki and he meets some UN soldiers. And he grows up very, very quickly and discovers that the world is much bigger than he thinks it is.
We're often conditioned these days to expect a happy ending. And even 2 pages before the end of this book, I thought Jojo's story was going to end happily. We don't want to spoil the ending, of course, but it left me feeling rather sad with a feeling, why is the world like this?
When you think of the number of children who are caught up in wars throughout the world, to try and make it a happy ending, almost like a Hollywood ending, I think would be false. And I think it was very brave of my publishers to allow me to have a truthful ending. And when you're writing fiction, truth is what you always go after.
Jojo's story is part of the Cambridge English Readers series. And I thought we could perhaps just spend some time looking at some of the features of your story that are intended to make it suitable for learners of English.
We have a word list, which Cambridge produces, but that isn't in the front of my head when I'm writing. I abide by it, but I'm thinking, how can I make this a really powerful story?
The very small children are happy here because they don't understand what is happening in our country. All the other children are unhappy. I know that because they shout and cry in the night. No one sleeps quietly here. Dr. Nikki is the doctor here. She speaks our language very well and is very nice. She wears a white T-shirt with letters on it. What are the letters for? I ask her. The letters are for Médecins Sans Frontières. That means Doctors Without Borders, she answers. I want to go to the country without borders, I tell her.
And what sort of help is there for readers to get to know the characters in the book and perhaps unfamiliar words in the story?
We have the cast of characters, and then any new word in the story that's a bit difficult or above the level is explained and also shown in the illustrations, and the illustrations are very important.
What do you think are some of the benefits for learners of English in reading simplified original fiction like this?
There are the obvious benefits in the fact they increase their vocabulary and they increase their reading skills. But much more than that, when you start reading stories, you often go above your own level because once you're hooked on the story, you want more and then you want to read more.
This is the BBC World Service and you're listening to The Reading Group. Now, for students of English, the American writer Sylvia Plath is perhaps best known for her autobiographical novel The Bell Jar, a moving and shocking story of growing up. But it's her poems that made Sylvia Plath famous, and they're greatly admired for their brave and clever writing about suffering. At various points in her life, Sylvia Plath battled with deep depression, but committed suicide in 1963 at the age of 30. After her death, her last poems were published in a collection called Ariel. Ariel was the name of her favourite horse, and it's also the title of one of her best and most challenging poems. Reading Group reporter Anna-Marit van der Marder went to the British Library in London, where curators Sally Brown and Chris Fletcher talked to her about a manuscript copy of the poem.
We have here inside a cover made of red typewriter carbon paper a manuscript of a very famous poem by Sylvia Plath. It's written out very neatly. It's a fair copy made specially for her friend Al Alvarez. And in fact, it says Ariel and then in brackets for Al. It has not got any changes at all. It's a complete fair copy. It's written in her characteristic hand, which is rather a schoolgirly hand. It's a rather young hand. It's not a mature hand. It's very careful. And it's signed at the bottom with her full name, Sylvia Plath, and then a very characteristic little drawing of a flower, a pink flower.
It's striking that the appearance of this poem looks very, very friendly and nice, although the contents of the poem is actually the opposite.
It certainly is extraordinary to see such a famous poem in this guise of a little keepsake almost, when you compare its appearance with its content, which is extremely shocking and extraordinary.
Can you tell me when this poem has been written?
This was written not long before her death. She committed suicide early in 1963, and these poems were written towards the end of the previous year, when she was separated from her husband Ted Hughes and living alone. And she had flu. She had terrible bouts of flu and high fever, and she suddenly found that she was able to sit down despite the fevers, and these poems, the now known as the Ariel poems, which were the poems published after her death, but the last ones she wrote, poured out of her in the most extraordinary way.
It's interesting, of all the poems perhaps in that collection, Ariel, although it's full of all sorts of dark language and sinister undertones, is in a strange way a triumphant poem as well. And it's significant that perhaps she chose this to write out in this very neat way and present to Al Alvarez, who clearly meant so much to her.
She describes herself actually here as suicidal, but then she ends in the very last few lines. She says she is suicidal, at one with the drive into the red eye, the cauldron of morning. So there's a sense of her rising out of her suicide and being born anew and becoming something else in a triumphant way rather than a despairing way.
Do you think all the pain and suffering that she writes about reflects her life, or at least the last part of her life?
Well, she suffered from mental illness from her teens, and she had bouts of quite severe mental illness, and obviously this coloured her writing. She had a manic depressive tendency, and at the end the depression overwhelmed her, darkness overwhelmed her.
Among 20th century poets, she must be one of the most autobiographical, confessional writers.
Right. Yes, the poems are in fact always essentially about herself.
Anna-Marit van der Marder was at the British Library learning more about Sylvia Plath's poetry. Join us again next time when we turn our attention to reading books in translation.
And that brings us to the end of today's programme. If you'd like to share your reading experiences, you can join our BBC Learning English group on Facebook. We'll have a different topic on the discussion board each week, linked to the subjects covered in the reading group programmes. So until next time, happy reading.